Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. We have a very special guest today. It is Corporate Bro. Armand, why should people listen?
Well, if you don't know who Corporate Bro is, he's got over 500,000 followers on Instagram, and he has every tactic around how to open a sales call, mindset around sales, and what it takes to be a President's Club seller. And today he's breaking it down step by step.
A three, a two, a one, corporate action. All right, Corp, welcome to the show. We start every single episode with your top three actionable takeaways. So let's get your three.
My first takeaway, this is going to sound like something you've probably never heard before because a lot of what I do is just frankly different. But I always say more is more at the end of the day. You got to own the conversation from the jump. The more you speak, the smarter you sound. And that's just basic psychology. That's just basic science. I like to use complicated words. I like to let people know that I'm highly, highly educated. Fun fact, I went to Stanford Business School. I don't know if you've ever looked at a list of business schools, but you don't really have to look at the list because it's the top one. But I use words like phablet, which everybody knows, I think, is a phone tablet. I say viral loop a lot. And I also like to mix in the word dongle. I find that when you use advanced language, you put the prospect on their heels, as you should. You guys have all heard the 80-20 rule, which I'm sure you all know means talk at least 80% of the time. I try to bring it up to 90. When I look at my gong calls, if I'm not making noise at least, I would say 88 to 92% of the time, if I'm getting specific. I mean, this is thousands and thousands of sales calls. So again, like I really try to be scientific about this. I'm making noise at least that much. Silence is, it's known as negative space, which is going to lead to negative outcomes. You got to continue to be front and center. Prospects love that. They want to be talked at. They want to be owned in a sense. And you can be that person, right? You also want to highlight product. I cannot stress this enough. Your engineers don't work as hard as they do so that you can just talk about how it benefits the person on the other end. Like at the end of the day, you don't know which feature is going to resonate. So I hit them all. You go top to bottom, piece by piece, and you just keep staring them in the eyes. You look at them. And as soon as you see like a little perk up, they're often not paying attention. All of a sudden you see like an eye movement flicker, boom, that's a sign. You mentally log that because you're going to come back to that later. So I would say my first tip is essentially more is more.
Wow. And that tip gave us more. What's number two?
Number two, be confident, be dominant. People like someone who's self-assured, someone who really is just feeling themselves, like laughing at their own jokes. You know what I mean? Especially someone who does clearly put themselves on a pedestal, right? You don't want to be afraid to look down and belittle people. You want to laugh at them in a lot of senses. Like that sounds mean, but if they ask you a question, I always lead with a scoff. Always like, what? You serious? You know what I mean? Here, let me re-explain that for you nice and slow so you can catch up to me. Assume they know not a single thing, but don't treat them like children. Treat them like adults who are acting like children. Be somewhat disgusted in them. And that air of confidence, that air of arrogance leads to a point where you can ask and say anything you want. And what are they going to do about it? Especially when you go for that closing question at the end. So I also like to guarantee results. That's something, it's called selling the dream. I think that's kind of 101 stuff. I'm sure all your listeners already do that. But I do often just like say, I guarantee ROI. I don't put it in writing because that's silly. Who cares what's on paper? So that's number two is be confident, be dominant.
Very nice. Round us out. What's number three?
Number three, I mean, look, you hear this in like middle school. You hear this like now on other popular podcasts. Like there is no such thing as no. Just wipe that out of your vocabulary. I think it was Grant Cardone. It might've been that new bald guy, the sales trainer, Andy's whatever. The like, we are sales soldiers guy. Like, I love his stuff, by the way. But there really is no such thing as no. It's not even like a maybe later situation. Like, wipe maybe out as well. It's a yes. It's always a yes. And you just have to break them down. Like, you just have to wear them down. Like anybody. We all have a price. We all have a level of resistance that can slowly be worn and worn until you're nothing. And that's the key. Like, how quickly can you wear your prospects down to nothing where they give you the, all right, fine, right? That's music to my ears. Just another peasant giving you their money. So the third one for me is just, there is no such thing as no.
All righty, Corp. So let's take this all the way to the top of a call. And the reason for that is we talk a lot of times, the way that you start the call will dictate the way that the call ends. And you talk about being confident and dominant, and that will oftentimes start with the way that you open up a sales call. So you get on a sales call, trying to sell your thing. Prospect jumps on the Zoom. How do you kick off that call?
If it's just a phone call, it's like, what's up, little bro? Right? It totally disarms them. They're never expecting that. I guarantee nobody else uses that opener. Right? That's mine. That's like my kind of like little quirk. I always call the prospect a little right off the top. I don't know. It just sets the precedent of how I'm going to be and what it's going to be like. If it's a video call, oftentimes I'm like naked from the lower half and I walk in. You see the door behind me over there? I have a remote where I just log on and I just walk over. I mean, I'm still wearing the jacket. I'm wearing the button down, but I'm naked. And I just like walk straight in and sit down. And then I use my opener. Sup, little bit. And we go from there. My calls, like everyone schedules them for 30. I only need about 15 usually. So I'm that guy who just loves to give people back time in their day, but not until I get what I want.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you really believe in the idea of these pattern interrupts, where one of the things we talk about on this show is you can't be perceived to be better until you're first perceived to be different. And it sounds like you're really leaning into how you're different. I'm thinking about the beginning of a sales call. And for our prospects, they deal with all types of salespeople, and they don't always know what they're going to get. And so at the beginning of the sales call, it's usually important to set some sort of upfront expectations, maybe in the form of an agenda. I'm curious, how do you take command or guide the call or set expectations early on once you've led with this sort of unconventional pattern interrupt?
Yeah, my agenda is just, this is going to hurt and probably a lot. I'm like a big one size fits all kind of guy. And so I have this deck, which is mostly just pictures of all this cool shit I've done because I want people to know about all the cool shit. But it has nothing to do with my product. But then it's just like bullets of product features. People get too caught up in this like, here's my company, like here's our mission, like here's how we were founded. People buy from people and people buy from me. And that's just something like, what are some of the cool things I've done? I've gone to the Great Wall of China. And by the way, it's not even that great or that tall. Spoiler, but people are like, that's cool. I rode a camel once. I milked a cow for like 45 minutes and I actually made the how-to video and I make them watch that. I broke it down. It's only 15 minutes long. People use case studies. Like I show people how to milk a cow. It's kind of explaining the same thing. It's more just like how process-oriented I am and how process-oriented this process is in terms of the process that we process. In terms of like the product features, those are just words on a page. One thing I always recommend people say early in the calls is like, I always say, just trust me, I'm a good guy. I guarantee anybody listening to this is like, all of a sudden they're looking in their wallet right now. They don't even know why. Like, you don't even know what I'm selling yet. Like, that's the thing. Like, you want to be someone that people want to buy from. It doesn't matter what you're selling. It's the features that like hammer it home.
Yeah. One of the things that I've experienced on a sales call is sometimes there's like a tug of war almost between like your sales process, what you feel like you need to communicate about your product or your company or yourself, and then the things that like the buyer wants. And I think great salespeople, there's usually a bit of balance between both. But sometimes prospects, they'll really try to pull us in a different direction. Like early in the call, they might start asking you about your price, or they might immediately jump to like, hey, I don't have a lot of time here. Can you just show me a demo? So what's your approach when the prospect says, hey, like what we're getting out of this interaction, I actually want to maybe do some other things. How do you respond in that scenario?
Well, it's usually just a harsh no. Like you just come in, no, I just simply don't let them do that. You talked about the tug of war thing. Like I lift a lot. You're probably like, duh, Corp, you have massive biceps. Duh. I lift a lot. I go to Jamba Juice. You get the protein shots and then the whey protein shots. That is a secret that I don't tell a lot of people about, but that's how I'm able to just one arm pull and they fall forward. Sometimes when people push, you want to push back, but I then pull. Or they want to pull and I just let go of the rope. Then they fall down. Then I jump on top of them. Then I choke them out. So that's kind of the dance that I'm trying to do, get them to a point where they're like starting to lose vision because I'm choking them out. They're losing air. And like, that's the type of control you got to have. That's the domineering part. Like, this isn't a push pull, like tug of war dance. This is like, they're on their ass and you're half naked on Zoom on top of them. And then they buy stuff. That's literally, not even figuratively or metaphorically. That's how it goes. That's business.
So Corp, we've talked on the show about the right way to get someone talking and what you want them to be talking about versus not. And so when you start to ask a prospect questions, I'm curious, do you have any common go-to discovery questions that you found particularly effective?
A few questions I like to ask. When's the last time you cried? And then they'll tell you it's usually it's like a death or something. And then you just be like, weak. And you ask it in such a genuine, candid way that they expose their weakness. And I'll say things like, what do you fear the most? What keeps you up at night? I love the crying question because it just gives me a wealth of things to talk about. So I like to get them to open up. But the key is like in the middle of it, they'll be like, I was going through this thing. Like right when they get in there, you laugh. Shut them up. So once again, you've elevated yourself and they have shown themselves as weak. So questions to expose weakness. That's often what I try to do.
Yeah, it seems like you're extremely pointed with your questions. And yeah, I mean, I've heard people buy because of emotion and then they back it up with logic. I mean, it seems to me like you're having really successful first introductory calls. And one of the things my first sales manager ever taught me was she said, Nick, you can never leave a call without getting a next step on the books. You've always got to make sure you get a next step. And that can be hard sometimes. Prospects are busy or they say they need to think about it or take things back to the team and they'll let me know how they're feeling. And I've struggled sometimes to get next steps on the books with all of my ops. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for me.
Yeah, I usually don't let them get off the call. And if they do, then I'm at wherever their physical location is within 30 minutes. So I don't want to explain how I do that, but I find that people are more willing to work with you and work under the processes that you've outlined if you're physically there. And again, it helps to be super strong. It helps to be like domineering. And so for me, my next step is always signing the contract. I don't know what questions, concerns, like issues they could possibly have other than like, where's my pen? And that's why I got you. And then sign the contract, you send it back to me and then whoosh, they're off to account management where it's somebody else's problem. So I would say like, there is only one next step and that is signing a contract. If you execute the things I'm saying, like you're not really going to have any of these like outstanding, like I don't have prospects who ghost me. Like you can't ghost me if I'm always with you, if I'm physically with you. Like I just simply won't leave. And if you pay off the cops, then they, I mean, $5 here, Sheriff, like they're not going to do shit either.
So Ross, let's say that I might not have perfect demo skills or I might not be able to ask the discovery questions in the same way. And my prospect looks back at me and they're like, Corp, I got to think about this. I got to think about it. And you're like, no, we got to sign the contract now. And they're like, no, I got to think about it. What do you do when a prospect isn't willing to sign a contract on the spot? Because you did say there's no such thing as no. And oftentimes I give them the time to think about it.
If I'm in that position, I would say probably the first thing I do is I go to LinkedIn. I go to that stupid little profile picture and I put open to work. I will then hit every single job site I can possibly find until I find a marketing role, something more apt for my skills, something because I'm a little bee who can't close. And I immediately start applying because clearly sales isn't for me. You really want to play to your strengths. And if you are someone who like doesn't give a perfect demo, all I'm thinking is like, how do I leverage my skill set somewhere else in another role, somewhere further away from revenue where I can't affect the business in such a negative way?
You've talked about your perfect demo a couple times. What are some best practices that salespeople should be focused on when they're giving demos? And what are some common mistakes that you see that you think folks should probably try to avoid?
I hear this like common fallacy, like everybody talks about empathy. No, this isn't about them. Stop trying to make this about them and their needs and their pains and blah, blah, blah. The only reason you get their pain is to expose their weakness so that you can conquer it. For me, I try to bring in a bunch of multimedia. That leads me into my PowerPoint, which has a bunch of secret things. People have really short attention spans. So think of it like TikTok, right? How addicted can I get these people? How like surprised can I make these folks with all the different elements that come in there, depending on what industry they're in? I have a mariachi band that comes in. I also have like random people just kind of FaceTime in to just thank me. Oh my God, like I'm so thankful for like us, like the way you sold me and the effect you've had on my life and the products that you've sold me. I do believe like my prospects, they are bonded by this like kind of eternal like embarrassments or just like blind admiration for me. It does add to the demo. I invite everybody to Zoom when I do these things. So it's like, you'll see probably like a few thousand people on the invite list. It's really just for me and the prospect, but oftentimes people do beam in. So again, it's like, keep them guessing.
So I can now see clearly, I thought we were gonna talk about things like multi-threading or how to do a demo on a second call. And it's clear that the sales process becomes much easier if you're just running perfect demos, you're talking 90% of the time, and you're doing everything with a one-call close. And so now the name of the game is just to get more, as many of these meetings as possible, so you can get as many one-call closes as possible. So I'm sure, Corp, you are a killer cold caller. And the reason you're able to close so many of these deals is because you're landing these meetings left and right. And so I have to know, when you pick up the phone and you're making a cold call, what is your go-to opener to book those meetings?
It's funny. I remember like my very first cold call. I was working at Oracle, and these are like multi-million dollar deals, like average sales cycle, 18 months. I mentioned this earlier, and I always start like, what's up, little bit? No joke. 10 minutes later, we have a $2 million contract signed, filed, done. I was only a BDR. I wasn't even allowed to close. It just like happened. Again, that was early in my career. I actually don't make a ton of cold calls anymore. People typically come to me. I have a bunch of SDRs that I'm training right now. They get two or three Pringles for every single meeting they set, because that's automatic revenue for me. I mean, look at this. Look at this. Look. Like, you see these Jordans back here? You see these? This doesn't happen unless you're an absolute freaking beast. And I admit, I outsource a little bit of my stuff now to the prisoners that I have, sorry, the SDRs that I have in the other room. For me, it's not really about cold calling anymore. It's just about cracking that whip and making sure that they're getting their whey protein shots from Jamba Juice.
It's hard sometimes for new SDRs because they face a lot of rejection. They have a job that can sometimes be monotonous, and it can really be tough to keep picking yourself up every single day, whether you're an SDR or frankly any salesperson. When you're teaching these folks, maybe not about the technical piece of selling, but maybe more just like the philosophy and the mindset, what are some lessons that you have for these SDRs that it sound like might be living in your apartment?
Yeah, well, first of all, don't talk to me. The only sound I should ever hear is them with prospects on the phone. I tell them it's a thankless role. They love working here because they know when they leave, they're going to be killers. They're going to be absolute freaks. I will say, like, you know, being in sales isn't for everyone. And probably 80% of the kids in the other room, they're not going to make it. And it's not because they're not going to make it in sales. It's because they're not going to set enough meetings to get the Pringles they need to survive. That's sales in a nutshell. And it really is survival of the fittest. It's find a way to get it done. For the SDRs out there that are like, I'm not sure, there's your answer. Get out. Go find that marketing role. You know, maybe get out of tech altogether. I don't know if it's for you. Go be a little cabana boy or something. That sounds fun. So when I visit Mexico next year, you can be like, hey, I couldn't make it. And I'll say, yeah, fine. Pina colada. I have no sympathy. This is the real world. Robots are coming. The AI is coming. So it's kind of a now or never proposition. And those kids know it.
When we think about the different ways that AI is taking over sales, a lot of times people are saying the more you can learn to use AI as a seller, the more well-equipped you will be to adapt when roles start getting replaced, prospecting is automated, and all of that stuff. And so when you think about some of the ways that you might use AI in your sales process, what are some of the most fruitful uses of new age tech that sellers can start to adopt today?
Well, for me, it's the deepfakes, for sure. It's truly a shame that there's only one of me. Truly a shame. So first of all, deepfakes. Do you know how many different versions of myself have walked half naked through that door? And so I've been A/B testing a lot of that. Parts bigger, parts smaller, hair a little different, different color jackets. You get it. That's how I'm learning to scale myself. So I can actually run hundreds of demos. Now, again, I have the SDRs making the calls. Yes, AI is probably coming for them too, but there's just something, I don't know. I love working with the team. And so having them next door, like I could replace them tomorrow with a chatbot, truly. But I don't, because I do enjoy being with them. So for me, AI is all about scaling myself, scaling my activity. Like, how many demos can I make? How many calls could I make in theory if I wasn't paying SDRs and Pringles? That type of thing. How do I write even better? I actually have slowly gotten away from writing. I just use voice messages of myself. And I don't know when that whole like Google throttling's coming, because I do use some like sequencers. But until then, deepfake my voice, do voice memos, and eventually I'll replace the nerds in the other room. It's all about scaling yourself.
All right, Corp, this has been a interesting episode, and we're running out of time. And so we got to move to the last question. And the final question is this. We've talked about a lot of really great things that salespeople should be doing. Now I got to flip that on its head and ask you about a shouldn't. And so my last question for you is, what is one bad habit that you see a lot of salespeople exhibiting that you think they need to break because it hurts them more than it helps?
Look, for the people in the back, stop putting yourself in the prospect's shoes. Stop showing empathy. You're not them. They're not you. Like, I'm so sick of everyone like making this about other people. You can be a little selfish. I don't know. This isn't about their feelings. This isn't about their wants, their needs. This is about you closing business and driving revenue, because that's the most important thing there is. Stop asking yourself, like, how does this make them feel? It's all, how do you feel? period. And everything goes off that.
Well, Corp, thank you for joining us. Everybody stick around for a 60-second recap coming up soon. Your top... Armand, I'm kind of having trouble with this one. Like, I was taking notes during the episode, and I don't really have anything actionable that I would actually advocate for our audience to do from this one. Did you write anything down?
Dude, did I tell you the gist behind this episode?
No, I didn't think his advice was very good. You booked him, and so, like, honestly, man, it was weird.
Dude, this was the April Fool's Day special that I was telling you about. We booked this back in February. It's corporate. This is not actually stuff we want people to do.
That was a joke?
Yeah, you were taking the advice?
Oh, gosh. I was sitting there being like, okay, the talk to listen stuff, I got some work to do. I got to get closer to that 90-10 he was talking about. What?
Well, folks, look, if you want to learn more about sales, here's what you do. You basically just take everything we just talked about and go do the opposite. And folks, if you have not seen Corporate Bros stuff yet, you got a taste of it. It's freaking hilarious. The guy has literally worked in software sales and has some eerily accurate reenactions of what it is like to work in sales. So if you want to get more of this, go check out his newest podcast that dropped. It's called Demoted. And also give him a follow on Instagram, LinkedIn. Check him out. His name is Ross Pomerantz, aka Corporate Bro, and you'll find him online. All righty, folks. We'll see you on the next special, a real 30 NPC episode. Happy April Fool's Day. We'll catch you soon.